Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Yeah, I hope you appreciate the fact that there is no audiobook out there that gives you the ratification debates. And I believe that way too many people are way too busy with their lives, that they just can't sit down and read these things because they have too many responsibilities, kids, family, and all of these other things. And so here's an opportunity for you to hear how the Constitution was defined. This is probably the greatest treasure, and I assert this as the greatest treasure to the world, because I believe the Constitution was the perfect government for mankind. And as a matter of fact, because every single framer referred to the divine hand of providence as inspiring this great Constitution, then I want you to understand this, that I consider, because of that, I consider the Constitution scripture, not scripture for the salvation of man, but scripture for the governance of mankind. And if you understand every facet of the Constitution, the mechanisms of states being able to apply and become a part of this, there was really no limitations to the growth of the United States. The UN is a concept that has no reference to the divine hand of providence. The League of Nations was literally another conjuring up of creating a global government to enslave man. The UN does not care about liberty. It cares about law and keeping you from harming people and taking away your liberty. These governments are evil governments. The United States empowers people to live freely, but holds them accountable to the law and allows states to create laws. And as a matter of fact, most people don't realize this, but laws of obscenity and those types of things are actually constitutional laws. States can actually, you know, create obscenity laws and actually have blue laws and so forth. The federal government is the one that is constrained from creating any kind of laws. Anyway, I don't want to you know, belabor the point, because I know lots of people are probably jonesing for some news, jonesing for marketing, but getting through these ratification debates is really, one, critical, and two, both helpful, because then you can actually start listening to these and hearing how the Constitution is defined by these great minds. But even more importantly, the news that's going on isn't really going anywhere. We're going to continue to have problems. We're going to continue to have, polarization between the two sides of the ideology. And as a matter of fact, the evil side is always trying to polarize. I truly believe that those who are on the side of liberty, and I go through this all the time, that those who are wired for liberty aren't trying to subjugate people to say, you must follow this. They give people the freedom to follow it or diverge, but you cannot enslave us. We are protected. Our inalienable rights are protected. And these things have been galvanized within the Constitution. Most people would have used the word codified, but codified means something completely different than what most people believe it means. But anyway, there's a few more things. One thing is, I just want to, poke you. Are you a part of the problem? Are you engaged in helping solve the problem of unconstitutional government by supporting Republic Review? If you're not engaged in it, then I hate to tell you, but you are actually a part of the problem. The only way you become a part of the solution is by engaging. It's just like knowledge is not power just sitting in your head. You have to exercise that power. You have to act upon it, and then it becomes power. I want you to understand that we also have a sponsor right? And that Red State Coffee is, you know, a great way to help support us. I'm not saying that that's the only way, but we would, you know, appreciate anybody that drinks coffee to be proud and brag about, you know, having Red State Coffee. Take it to work. Be proud of the fact that you're supporting a solution, and you're not just supporting somebody to, you know, make good comments that you can agree with. We're not here to entertain. I am not trying to be a conservative entertainer. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to help educate and empower you so that you can act. That's why the ratification debates are that important. We have a listener drive, so now would be a great time to get somebody that maybe thinks like you, or, you know, is really fed up and frustrated with the tyranny and, you know, losing our liberties and so forth, and say, man, why don't you just check this out? Go download his podcast. Listen. We'll get these podcasts up. I know I'm probably a week behind, but we will get the podcast up by the weekend. We will have all the podcasts up and on our website so that you can start downloading these. Now, the other thing I want to get you to understand is we need to start bringing the constitutional awareness into the communities, and the best way to do that is to celebrate the Constitution. That comes up in September. It is never too late. Most people are procrastinators. Most people are way too busy. Start thinking about what you can do to help elevate constitutional awareness in your community. All right? And so with that, without any further ado, we are going to dive into what I would say is the the impeachment notes. And as a matter of fact, what we're getting here is a comment regarding Mr. McClain, who is a Federalist in supporting of the Constitution. And then we'll go, you know, into, I think, Mr. McClain again, and then the governor and so forth. I'll tell you who these comments are coming from. But I want you to understand that these statements, these arguments going back and forth, every time a Federalist is speaking, what they're giving you is the clarification of what this Constitution means. These guys are the foremost authorities on what that Constitution means. Whether we like it or not, in contract negotiations, these are legally binding definitions and terms to the contract. So, Mr. McClain says this: in England, the lords who try impeachments declare solely upon honor whether the persons impeached be guilty or not. In other words, they have the power of basically putting guilt upon the person and punishing them. In our system, the government is separated from the punishment. They just identify whether somebody is guilty and indicted of the crime and removes them from office, but they are not punished per the law. Anyway, going on, he says, but here the senators are on oath. This is a very happy security. It is further provided that when the president is tried, for he is also liable to be impeached, the chief justice shall preside in the Senate, because it might be supposed that the vice president might be connected. And so he makes two sides to this argument, that the vice president may be helpful, or the vice president may be self-serving. And so he goes on and says, because, and I could just go to the next comment, but you need to hear these words for you. Don't take my word for it. Listen to what these guys are saying. And he says, vice president might be connected together with the president in the same crime and would therefore be an improper person to judge him. It would be improper for another reason. On the removal of the president for office, it devolves on the vice president. In other words, he inherits that position. This being the case, if the vice president shall be judge, might he not look at the office of president and endeavor to influence the Senate against him? This is the most excellent caution. It has been objected by some that the president is in no danger from a trial by the Senate because he does nothing without its concurrence. It is true, he is expressly restricted not to make treaties without the concurrence of two-thirds of the senators present, nor appoint officers without concurrence of the Senate, not requiring two-thirds. The concurrence of all senators, however, is not required in either of those cases. They may be all present when he is impeached, and the other senators, in the meantime be introduced. The Chief Justice, who ought to presume, would not countenance a conclusion. One dissenting person might divulge their misbehavior. Besides, he is impeachable for his own misdemeanors, and as to their concurrence with him, he might be affected by misrepresentation of his own, in which case they would be innocent though they be guilty. And that's interesting, because they're innocent because they have not been tried for the crime. They're only being tried whether they are qualified to continue in the office. I think, therefore, the Senate a very proper body to try him. Notwithstanding the mode pointed out for impeaching and trying, there is not a single officer but may be tried and indicted at common law. For it is provided that a judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to the law. Thus, you find that no offender can escape the danger of punishment. Officers, however, when we get back after this break. So please stay tuned, and we have more clarity regarding the Constitution, impeachments, and all things Constitution after these two promos. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
All right, so we're now still covering Mr. McClain's refuting of, I believe it's Mr. Taylor, who has made some outlandish assertions of regarding impeachment and so forth, that the federal government can impeach everybody in public service and so forth. And so anyway, Mr. McClain is providing clarity regarding the impeachment process and so forth and punishment. And he goes on, and Mr. McClain says, officers, however, cannot be oppressed by an unjust decision of a bare majority, for it further provides that no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of two-thirds of the member present. A bare majority, my friends, is 50% plus one. That's a bare majority. So those gentlemen who formed this government have been particularly careful to distribute every part of it as equally as possible. I will continue in saying, for Mr. McLean, that they created so many checks within this system that it is, if it's followed and operates as designed, we have no fear, and there is no mechanism that the federal government, without lying and deceiving and bribing people and colluding and so forth, do we need to fear in losing our liberties. Anyway, he goes on and says, as the government is solely instituted for the United States, so the power of impeachment only extends to the officers of the United States. The gentleman who is much afraid of impeachment from the federal legislature is totally mistaken in his principles. This is Mr. Taylor now, an anti-federalist, and says this, Mr. Chairman, my apprehension is that this clause is connected with another, which gives the sole power of impeachment and is very dangerous. When I was offering an objection to this part, I observed that it was supposed by some that no impeachments could be preferred but the House of Representatives. I concluded that perhaps the collectors of the United States or gatherers of taxes might impose on individuals in this country, and that these individuals might think it too great a distance to go to the seat of the federal government to get redress and would therefore be injured with impunity. I observed that there were some gentlemen whose abilities are great who construe it in a manner different. They ought to be kind enough to carry their construction not to the mere letter, but to the meaning. I observe that when these great men are met in Congress, in consequence of this power, they will have the power to appointing the officers of the United States. My experience in life shows me that the friends of the members of the legislature will get these offices. These senators and members of the House of Representatives will appoint their friends to all offices. Now, I want to say something. First off, Mr. Taylor is really off here because, first off, when it comes to the enforcement agencies, the tax collectors, it is not the federal government that collects the taxes. It is the state's militia. They are only called forth in executing the union. And therefore, they are not employees of the federal government. The militia is employees. And what should happen is when the militia is called to serve, the federal government should reimburse the state for any compensation that is being provided to the militia. That's really what should have been happening. Anyway, and he goes on and points out that, you know, this corruption actually starts stemming from politicians appointing friends into positions. And it makes me think about how the Clintons and the Bushes and even the Obama, do you think Lerner was appointed by, you know, Obama? No. If you look at all of these appointments from George Bush Sr. on, it seems like all of these appointments were all working in the same cause and going after us patriots and so forth. That is the deep state. The origins of the deep state go much further back than just that. But these guys are all players, and that's one of the reasons why you see them all acting as friends and looking at Trump as the outlier. I don't know if that is staged, but nevertheless, let me just go on to say this, because another comment by Mr. McLean is this. The president is the superior officer who is to see the laws put in execution. He is amenable for maladministration in his office. Were it possible to suppose that the president could or should give wrong instructions to his deputies, whereby the citizens should be distressed, they would have redress in the ordinary courts of common law. But he says parties injured must go to the seat of government of the United States and get redress there. I do not think it necessary to go to the seat of the general government for that purpose. No persons will be obliged to attend there, but on extraordinary occasions. for Congress will form regulations so as to render it unnecessary for the inhabitants to go thither, but on such occasions. You got to understand, Congress can only make laws in accordance to the enumerated powers, direct ties. They cannot be implied ties. Oh, well, because we talk territories, this means that we can own all this different land. No. In Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17, it clearly lists the type of land that the federal government can possess. Anyway, so Mr. Johnston, or the governor of North Carolina, says this: Mr. Chairman, impeachment is a very different in its nature from what the learned gentleman from Granville supposes it to be. If an officer commits an offense against an individual, he is amenable to the courts of law. If he commits a crime against the state, he may be indicted and punished. Impeachment only extends to high crimes and misdemeanors in a public office. It is a mode of trial pointed out for great misdemeanors against the public. And I want you to understand, if you look at these impeachment processes and find out where the great crime against the public is. But I think neither the gentleman nor any other person need be afraid that officers who commit oppressions will pass with impunity. It is not to be apprehended that such officers will be tried by their own cousins and friends. Such not be on the jury at the trial of cause, it being a principle of law that no person interested in a cause who is in a relation of the party can be a juror to it. This is the light in which it strikes me. Therefore, the objection of the gentleman from Gainesville must necessarily fall to the ground on that principle. Mr. McLean says this: Mr. Chairman, I must obviate some objections that have been made. It was said by many of the argument that they could impeach and remove any officer, whether of the United States or of a particular state. This was suggested by the gentleman from New Hanover. Nothing appears to me more unnatural than such a construction. The Constitution says in one place that the House of Representatives shall have the sole power of impeachment. In the clauses under debate, it provides that the Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments, and then subjoins that judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office, honor, trust, or profit under the United States. And the fourth section of the second article, it says that the president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from the office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, sir, what could be more clear than obvious than this? The several clauses relate to the same subject and ought to be considered together. If considered separately and unconnected, the meaning is still clear. They relate to the government of the Union altogether. Judgment on impeachment only extends to removal from office and future disqualification to hold offices under the United States. Can those be removed from offices and disqualified to hold offices under the United States who actually held no office under the United States? The fourth section of the second article provides expressly for the removal of the president and the vice president and all civil officers of the United States on impeachment and conviction. So, in other words, both the House and the Senate agree of the removal. Does not this clearly prove that none of the officers of the United States are impeachable? Had any other been impeachable, why not provision made for the case of their own conviction? Why not point out that the punishment in one case as well as in others? I beg leave to observe that this is a constitution which is not made with reference to the government of any particular state or to officers of particular states, but to the government of the United States at large. We must suppose that every officer here is spoken of to be an officer of the United States. The words discover the meaning as plainly as possible. The sentence which provides that, quote, judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal of office, close quote, is joined by conjunction copulative of the sentence, quote, and disqualification to hold and enjoy office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States, close quote, which incontrovertibly proves the officer of the United States only are referred to. No other grammatical construction can be put upon it. But there is no necessity to refer to grammatical constructions and so forth. And so I think he's just trying to, you know, get rid of the nonsense that the United States government can impeach all public servants all the way down to the dog catcher. And so it's pretty clear that, and I think Mr. McLean hit the nail on the head right here. And when we come back, we will actually be talking about the militia. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so Mr. McLean is back up, and I don't know which gentleman he's referring to, but I kind of love the way they, you know, they aggrandize and they put so much emphasis on, I've never heard such a thing, and so forth. This is about guns and common law and the Constitution's limitations of the Constitution, and so forth. So this is a very important note. This is a huge definer of the limitations of the government, the federal government at that. Mr. Chairman, the Reverend Gentleman from Guilford has made an objection which astonishes me more than anything I have ever heard. He seems to be acquainted with the history of England, but he ought to consider whether his historical references apply to this country. He tells us of triennial elections being changed to septennial elections. This is a historical fact we well know, and the occasion in which it happened is equally well known. They talk as loudly as of constitutional rights and privileges in England as we do here, but they have no written constitution. They have common law, which has been altered. And anybody that wants to say that we're all under common law, we are not. The federal government does not have common law. It has a contract and delegated powers, and it can only create laws pursuant to those powers. The concept of constitutional law was another facade created by lawyers in self-aggrandizing themselves and saying, oh, well, this is a complex thing and we're going to create precedents. The Constitution gives no allowance for case law and precedents to be used in moving the Constitution of what's constitutional, what isn't constitutional at all. Had that been disclosed as a part of the constitutional powers for the federal government, that they could use the court system to make things constitutional using common law precedents, case law, and so forth, the Constitution would have been unanimously rejected. The concept was sold that this is a rigid contract and that they can only make laws in pursuant to the contract. Anyway, I get a little wound up. But anyway, he goes on and says, they have a common law which has been altered from year to year for every long period. And he's talking about England, Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights. These they look upon as their constitution, yet this is a constitution as it is universally considered. Parliament can change. Blackstone, in his admirable commentaries, tells us that the power of Parliament is transcendent and absolute and can do and undo everything that is not naturally impossible. The act, therefore, to which the reverend gentleman alludes was not unconstitutional. Or has any man said that the legislature can deviate from this Constitution? He's asking that question regarding the United States Constitution. The legislature is guided by the Constitution. They cannot travel. So this is a definitive here. They cannot travel beyond its bounds. The United States Congress cannot travel beyond the bounds of the Constitution. The Reverend Gentleman says that though the representatives are to be elected for 2 years, they may pass an act prolonging their appointment for 20 years or for natural life without any violation of the Constitution. Is it possible for any common understanding or sense to be put to this construction upon it? And I just want you to understand, this is huge. He's basically saying that Congress can change using statutes, regulations, and their exclusive legislative powers to actually do these types of things. And he's saying such an act, sir, would be a palpable, which means blatant, violation of the Constitution. Were they to attempt it, sir, the country would rise against them. And see, that's the problem, folks. We have to rise against them. We have not with force. We have to use republic review, auditing the Constitution, and say, where did we give you these powers? Anyway, after such unwarrantable suggestion as this, any objection may be made to the Constitution. It is necessary to give the power the power to government. I would ask that gentleman who is much afraid it will destroy our liberties, why he's not much afraid of our state legislatures, for they have much more power than we are now proposing to this general government. They have unlimited control over the purse and sword, yet no complaints are made. Why is he not much afraid that our state legislature can call out the militia to destroy our liberties? Will the militia be called by the general government to enslave the people, to enslave their friends, their families, themselves? The idea of the militia being made use of as an instrument to destroy our lives is almost as absurd to merit a refutation. In other words, a rebuttal or, you know, to further the argument or what have you. Anyway, it cannot be supposed that the representatives of our general government will be worse men than the members of our state government. Will we be such fools to send our greatest rascals to the general government? We must both be fools as well as villains to do so. And so, anyway, this is one of the best articulated comments regarding how Congress just cannot make rules amongst themselves to, create their own retirement, to create their own pay raises and so forth. I think it is in there that they can dictate their salaries, but that's only salaries. It does not include retirements and immunities, as it was very clear in the Massachusetts debates that Congress cannot pass powers or take on or pass laws that immune them from the same oppression. Anyway, I think it's really interesting that all of these ratification debates actually mesh, they synchronize, they say the same things, but they say them differently. And who is saying it? This is not a coincidence, my friends. This is a huge pile of overwhelming evidence that the federal government is bound by the Constitution. They can't go beyond it. Anything that they do actually outside the Constitution is a violation of the Constitution. And so now we talk with Mr. Iredell, or Mr. Iredell then stands up and says this. This is regarding the militia. With regard to the militia, it must be observed that he, the president, has the command of them when called into actual service of the United States, yet he has not the power of calling them out. The power of calling them out is vested in Congress. You see all of these checks and balances? For the purpose of executing the laws of the Union. The IRS has no authority to execute the laws of the Union. The FBI has no authority. I could go on and on. Every executive enforcement agency has no authority in executing the laws of the Union. The only way they can have the constitutional authority is you have to amend the Constitution, remove the militia, and create this huge facade that the federal government has usurped and self-aggrandized themselves. They've built a house of cards, and Republic Review blows their house of cards away because they are not anchored within these hard terms and definitions. When people talk about, these corporations and what the Congress has no authority to create corporations, there are states that are invalidly created because they were created as corporations. They must be created as states with equal footing. Congress has no authority to differentiate between one state and another. And I'm telling you, friends, the stuff is going to hit the fan when Republic Review happens. And all of these parasites that have been colluding to enslave us will try to run. I think that we have to understand this concept of justice and mercy, because how many people living today understood how we've been lied and deceived? There's way too many people that have just continually believed and embraced, and that's why when I look at all these people that have these jobs with the federal government and think that, this is a legitimate job and they're on a path of retirement and so forth, I'm sorry. You're a part of the house of cards. Anyway, he goes on and says, when the militia called out for any purpose, some person must command them, and who's so proper as that person who has the best evidence of his possessing the general confidence of the people, which is the president. I trust, therefore, that the power of commanding the militia when called forth into the actual service of the United States is not to be objected to. He goes on, Mr. Iredell, and makes some more comments regarding impeachment, and he says this. Another power that he has is to grant, actually this isn't just impeachments, but it's tying impeachments and pardons together, and is grant pardons, except in the case of impeachment. I believe it is the sense of a great part of America that this power should be exercised by their governors, the president and the governors of the states and so forth. Anyway, sorry about that. We will be right back with more of Mr. Iredell's comments regarding pardons and impeachments and justice and all of that right after these breaks. And you're going to find this is very fascinating comments he's making. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so, when we getting back to this Mr. Iredell's comments regarding pardons and impeachments, he says, another power that he has, the president has, is to grant pardons, except in the cases of impeachment. I believe it is the sense of a great part of America that this sole power should be exercised by their governors. It is, in several states, on the same footing that it is here. And it is the genius of a Republican form of government that laws should be rigidly executed without the influence. Now, you got to understand, laws aren't to be arbitrary, where all of a sudden something is law, and then something is legal, and then now it's illegal. To be clear, the Constitution does not allow the government to create ex post facto laws. What Virginia is doing and what Trump has done by banning bump stocks has made an ex post facto law, because bump stocks were legal and then all of a sudden they made them illegal. And the fact that if you have one and they pass a law that says you have one, it's one thing to say we're going to remove this product, but they can't tell you that something that was legal, that you're now a criminal because you own it. They can make it so that you can't sell it, but then that would be especially if it's like property or those types of things, where all of a sudden you can't sell anything because, you vested property and that it becomes tangible asset, that you can't sell that. That then is an unusual punishment or a harsh punishment, which I believe is a violation of the Eighth Amendment. Yes. Anyway, moving on, he says, without the influence of ill will, that when a man commits a crime, however powerful he or his friends may be, yet he should be punished for it. And on the other hand, though he should be universally hated by his country, his real guilt alone as to the particular charge is to operate against him. This strict and scrupulous observance of justice is proper in all governments, but is particularly indispensable in a Republican one, because in such a government, the law is superior to every man, regardless of whether he's the president or, a businessman, or even just a common man. And no man is superior to any other. But though this general principle he unquestionably Surely there is no gentleman in the committee who is not aware that there ought to be exceptions to it, because there may be instances where, though a man offends against the letter of the law, yet peculiar circumstances in this case may entitle him to mercy. It is impossible for any general law to foresee and provide for all possible cases that may arise, and therefore an inflexible adherence to it in every instance might frequently be the cause of every great injustice. For this reason, such a power ought to exist somewhere, and where could it be properly vested than a man who had received such strong proofs of him possessing the highest confidence of the people? This is power, however, only refers to offenses against the United States and not against particular states. Another reason for the president possessing this authority is this, that is often necessary to convict a man by means of his accomplices. We have sufficient experience that in this country, a criminal would often go unpunished were not this method be pursued against him, in other words, getting his accomplices to turn over on them. Till an accomplice's own danger is removed, his evidence ought to be regarded with great diffidence. Now, I want to say something, because if you understand pardoning and, you know, how some of our past presidents or our current president has been doing it, are they pardoning people that have committed crimes against the United States? And are these legitimately constitutional crimes against the United States? The other thing to consider is the concept of pardoning somebody in case of impeachment. Now, let's just say we actually impeached Clinton over the treason that he actually committed that was proven by Curry and Windterm in Congressional Record, where they laid out a timeline of when Clinton did very specific things in giving China, you know, technology from Loral that helped them create missiles that would actually hit America. We constantly gave them national security, and not we, Clinton gave them so that he could obtain money so that he could get reelected. He sold out America so that he could get reelected, and he was never impeached for that. Now, I want you to understand something. I've said this before, and it's really has nothing to do with the ratification debates, and the reason why it has nothing to do with the ratification debates is because they violated the Constitution by creating these retirement schemes and these benefit schemes and so forth. When you went into public service, you received a compensation, but you did not receive a retirement. And for the federal government to create retirement programs for those public servants, it's one thing to create the Department of War and have people working in there and giving them full compensation, but public servants themselves cannot grant themselves, you know, a golden parachute and grant themselves immunities from their own laws and so forth and so on. And so, in other words, because they have granted themselves and the president lifetime emoluments, that they are going to receive, you know, security, you know, Secret Service briefings and have access to government and, you know, be a part of government for the rest of their lives. This means that they are still in the service of their country, not as president, but as a past president. There is actually a position and pay and compensation for past presidents, which means that they are impeachable. They never amended the Constitution, and so, you know, either they get rid of this, and they get rid of this, you know, retirement security and all this stuff for public servants, or we go after Clinton and the rest of these folks and impeach them, and basically then let all the cards get on the table so that then they can be moved into a formal trial to where Clinton can be tried for treason. And then if a president wants to pardon him, he might be able to get pardoned from the treason, but he cannot be pardoned from the impeachment. So I wanted to create this scenario for you so that you understood. It doesn't mean Clinton could ever serve as a public servant again if he would have been tried for treason instead of perjury, because the Senate didn't feel, well, it's a pretty petty crime. that he perjured himself over, you know, an act of trying to defend himself. That's why they let him off. But had they actually tried him for the issues of treason, which he was clearly guilty of, as far as I'm concerned, prove me wrong. Everybody knows that he actually gave, and people actually tried to justify, well, he's the president of the United States. He has the power and authority to make those decisions. No, no, no. China is an enemy. They are a military, political enemy to the United States. And giving them aid and comfort with technology that makes them equal to us, are you kidding me? The president does not have the power to commit that type of treason. And so anybody that says, well, he has this discretion, that's with United States citizens. That's with, you know, with some cognitive thinking that, okay, this is really sensitive stuff. We should not be declassifying. And he went recklessly through our classification levels and all sorts of things. I would love to see, and I would like to see that court played out to where he is fully impeached. Give Congress something really to do instead of just trying to create allegations. You know what I mean? Well, anyway, the next comment, which is basically another, you know, note by Mr. Iredell regarding impeachments and these general powers and so forth, is it emphasizes once again the disqualification for public service. This is why understanding impeachments and understanding Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is very similar, but it lowers the bar. You don't have to commit high crimes or misdemeanors. All you have to do is commit moral perjury. You say you're supposed to support the Constitution and you do something that violates the Constitution. You don't get impeached. You are removed and disqualified. And if you want to sue for your seat, then you have to bring forth evidence how, you know, voting to give aid and comfort to illegal aliens who are violating the Constitution is not a violation of their oath to support the Constitution and those laws of immigration. You see my point, friends? There's a lot of people that, because we actually have the mechanisms and the teeth within the Constitution, we have a lot of people that are on the cusp of being removed from office. And I'm here to tell you, we need to start using these tools afforded to us. If you want to drain the swamp, use the Constitution. But you can't use it unless you understand what all of these things mean. And we're literally throwing ourselves at the mercy of these lawyers and politicians with machinations of self-aggrandizing them with even more power. We are at that cusp. I'm also out of time. I know that we've got some other comments coming up. So in our next episode, we will dig more into the North Carolina debates. They talk a lot about impeachment because obviously these guys were lawyers. So I just want you to understand that, you know, this is one of those debates that actually gets into a lot of discussions over impeachment. And so we have more on this, as well as a little bit more on the powers of the federal government and so forth. We are reclaiming the republic. We need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. www.takeactionpodcast.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.